on to Health Talk Radio Africa, the show that inspires you to improve your health, educates you on health and nutrition issues. We offer practical tips on daily living so you can have better health. I am your host, Dr. Mary Mugambi, a doctor in nutritional sciences, talking to you from the city in the sun, Nairobi, Kenya. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Health Talk Radio Africa. Thank you for tuning in wherever you are. Today we discuss how we can psychologically help teenage mothers. You have just listened to a song by those teenage mothers. For this podcast on Health Talk Radio Africa, we visited an informal settlement deep in the heart of Nairobi, Kenya. We talked and listened to teenage mothers themselves, hearing their side of the story on teenage pregnancies and motherhood. In most countries in Africa, the number of teenage pregnancies has increased dramatically, especially during this coronavirus pandemic. As we record this podcast in Eastern Africa, national secondary school exams are going on. Many teenagers are admitted in maternity wards to give birth. At the same time, they are writing their national exams inside these maternity wards. That is devastating. The issue of skyrocketing teenage pregnancies is a tough topic and also a taboo one. Cultural and religious norms dictate that there should be no sex before marriage. In many parts of Africa, especially South Africa, female virginity is highly valued. But teenage pregnancies have increased exponentially. We are also privileged to talk to Dr. Josephine Kinya, a psychologist who is a mental health expert and has counseled hundreds of teenagers. She also mentors a large group of teenage mothers from the informal settlements. Welcome, Dr. Kinya.
Thank you very much, Doc. Yeah. And thank you for having me here.
Okay. Listeners, the continent is asking, what is next for these teenage mothers? How do we help them psychologically? We look at this taboo topic from five different angles. The African community, the parents of the teenage mother, religious institutions, the school setting, and the teen mother herself. Let us begin with the African community. You know, the community places a lot of stigma and judgment on the pregnant teenager and mother. Rarely does the African community offer sex education, unless in private arrangement. And sadly, religious institutions will not even discuss the topic on how to educate the young people on sexual matters. Teenagers in urban areas learn sexual matters from peers, movies, internet, and through experimentation. But as a community, we assume that teenage girls and boys will learn about sex somewhere elsewhere, such as school, placing enormous pressure on teenagers. There is increased pressure to debut on sexual activity. Sadly, As a community, we turn around and pass judgment and stigmatize the pregnant teenager and mother. So, Dr. Kinya, given what I've just described about the African community, where do we start as a community to help the teenager deal with the trauma of teenage pregnancy and motherhood? I'm talking psychologically here. Where do we begin?
Thank you so much, Doc, for having me this evening. And let me say that from my own experience and interaction with teenage moms, especially during the pandemic, we have had quite a number of big population of teenagers, you know, falling into the trap of pregnancy. And as the community, these children, we should understand that they are going through so much. Number one, even after birth, you find so many children right now from the group, for example, that we have of to around 20, 22 girls. They go through a lot of, you know, they go through postpartum depression.
Postpartum
depression, because these are young kids.
Yes.
They are expecting babies. They are babies expecting babies.
Yes.
And so their brain is not even yet developed to figure out even their own life. And now they have to think about another child, you know.
Yes.
So they go through a lot of that, and it's very common among the teenage mothers. So they need a lot of understanding, because you find that with postpartum depression, you find now these girls, they start now having suicidal ideation.
Oh,
you know, they think of, you know, like, this is the end of life. Some have even confessed thinking of taking away their lives because they think it is the end of life. They don't have the resources. And for example, the children of the young teenage girls who are pregnant that I've interacted with, you find they're from the less fortunate population. So
you
find that they are looking at their lives and they are not seeing any light at the end of the tunnel. So they need a lot of support. They need a lot of support. And you find also, because the pregnancy is very stressful.
Yes.
The idea that they learn, I am pregnant, I'm expecting another child. And in most cases, you find the men who fathered these children that they're expecting, they run away. So when they take off, then the girl is left to deal with the whole stress and trying to figure out, how do I manage this? How do I walk through this pregnancy? When I give birth, is it going to be safe for me? You find many of them also present with what we call PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So we all have these girls also tending to bend towards substance abuse, because they want to numb the pain, you know.
Okay.
At the same time, you find that these girls, because of all this stress they are going through, you know, loss of hope, self stigma from the community, like you are mentioning the community, you find that the families also increase. Instead of really studying with these children, they actually increase their stress levels, because you find they go without food, you know, there's no positive communication, they are rushed out, there is body shaming, and so many things. So these children, the young mothers, need a lot of support.
Okay. You know, as a community, we judge so quickly, but now we have this teenager, 14, 16, 18. How do we not place stigma and judgment? You know, you said the young father, the boy, the teenage father himself is gone. We don't really judge the boy.
No.
But we judge the girl.
The girl is judged.
You know,
He's crucified.
Actually, that is even a better word. Yeah. We crucify.
Yeah.
Crucify
the girl.
Listeners, let us hear what our teenage mothers say on how, as a society, we discriminate against them. I will translate for you.
Discrimination ingine ni kiwa na marafiki pia wanasoma, wazazi wao wanakuambia usikae nao, pia wao watafanya na wazai. Wazai mapema kwa shule.
When I am with my girlfriends that I study with, their parents tell me not to spend time with their daughters. I will make them get pregnant and give birth early, just like me. They chase me away.
Unaogopa kutembea, ili watu watakuongea vibaya. Sasa hii inakufanya ukue na uoga.
You are afraid to walk outside because people will talk badly at you. So you become extremely afraid to go outside. My parents insulted me, demeaned me, told me to go to the boy that made me pregnant. They said a lot of bad things. Now they reluctantly hold the baby with their heads held to one side. Listeners, let us go back to the interview with Dr. Kinga. Doc, how do we not place stigma? I just want to be able to tell our listeners, you can do A, B, or C so that you don't judge, fall into the trap of not judging this teenager.
Hmm.
Is it that we place we walk in their shoes? What do we do? Because, after I meet a pregnant teenager, I have to keep quiet and, you know, I stand by a corner and so that I don't judge her.
Mm-hmm.
You
know,
maybe you can give one or two tips so that you don't fall into the trap of judging.
I think a doc, we need to do a lot of psychoeducation on to the parents or the caregivers, because most of these children you find they are not even living with their own parents.
Oh my, okay.
They are living with the other siblings,
okay,
or relatives, or they are living with one parent, and in this parent there is another parent who is step, whether it is the mother or the father.
Yeah.
So we need a lot of psychoeducation.
Yes.
So that then these children, the parent can be able to understand,
yes,
how do I handle this child?
Yes.
You know, how do we, what are the needs of this child? Yes, yes. The child is pregnant.
Yeah.
Has fallen pregnant. Like we end in our group, the lowest age was 12. We had a 12-year-old who gave birth, by the way, through CS.
A 12-year-old.
A 12-year-old in grade 7, you know. And, the parent to this girl, the mother, gave birth to her when she was 14.
So it's intergenerational.
Exactly. So clearly, this is a child who just was born by another teenager, and they have managed to live for 12 years. By the grace of God, you know. So these parents need to be psycho-educated, even on parenting styles, for example.
Mm.
You know, how do I talk? Because most of the cases, like when you listen to these girls, it was stress at home. It was seeing mom fight. It was seeing, you know, home is never, it's no longer home. So they seek sorrows from other kids and older men.
So they stress at home.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to find comfort
mm-hmm.
and acceptance
mm-hmm. yeah.
outside the home and gets them into trouble.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Now we go back to the mother now.
Yeah.
The home. That's yeah. where we start.
Yes.
Make the home safer.
Yeah.
Make the home oven. Home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Not just a house where yeah.
we people have, sleep.
People sleep. People eat. Let's make these homes a home for the children, you know.
Okay.
Let's not, and when I talk about a psychoeducation, it's now where we bring in all these. How do we coexist with these children in this home? Is it just about taking them to school and making sure they have a meal and that's it?
Okay.
It is about how is our relationship, even as both parents, affecting
yes.
the child?
Yes.
You know, psychoeducation also on what are we modeling?
Okay.
You know, what are we modeling?
What do you mean by that? For
what I mean is
our
children learn more by what they see.
Okay, Doc, other than going to make a home a home, what else can we do to remove stigma from these teenage mothers? What can we do?
The other thing that we can do, Doc, is to, you know, the society, you know, family is included.
Yes.
It is a family that makes the society. They go through a lot of discrimination.
Yes.
And the discrimination starts at home.
Okay, you know? Yes, and you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, so the discrimination will start at home and it will leave the home and the child will feel discriminated, bringing in issues of lowered self-esteem, stress, and so many other factors into it. So reducing or making sure that these children are not discriminated is very, very, very important.
Okay.
And when we were talking about what can we do for these children to feel more at home, you know, with one of the things that we do, we should maybe try to do as we psychoeducate the parents is to be hands-on. Let's parents try to be hands-on parents. Where is my child? Who is with my child? Where are they going? Where are they going to spend their time? So that then we can take care of, safeguard the children from predators.
Mm.
Most of the most of the men who father these children are not just the children that go to school with these children. No, they are not just the young boys, but you find that some girls were actually lured into sex by older men, you know. So I think when a parent is hands-on, they are able to know where is my child, where, you know, there is accountability, like,
Who
is my child with?
What they're doing.
What are they doing?
Mm.
Who are they spending time with?
Okay.
So that really helps.
Okay.
So now, yeah, I think I needed to emphasize on that.
Mm.
And now what can we do to reduce stigma is to understand these children. These are children, for starters.
Okay.
You know, they just had sex and here they are.
Yes.
And that does not make that child a bad child, right? Some of them, most of them, like five girls, actually it was their first encounter, sex encounter. And maybe I'm bending this discussion towards more of less privileged children because I've interacted with them. But I think these factors would also cut across all the populations. You see that these girls that we had, this group of girls that we have, most of them were lured into sex because they needed food to buy food.
They needed money.
They need money to buy food, you know, to buy pads. And in the process, the sanitary towels. And
yes.
In the process of looking for money to get the basic needs, and they get to do, they are lured into sex. For even 50 shillings.
Less than a dollar.
Less than a dollar, actually. And
so we really shouldn't judge them because, one, they're already low socioeconomic and they're just looking for a coin to get food, to get sanitary towel, to live.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah? Exactly, exactly, wow. Doc. Thank you so much. And you see, the moment we don't understand these children, and I really applaud the government of Kenya for accepting these children back to school into the classrooms, because most of them are in the elementary level, others are in high school, and because other than the pregnancy, this child is already traumatized.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah.
So Lily, not understanding them and labeling them and taking them through all these things, we are actually not helping their trauma. We are actually increasing it.
Yeah.
And then what that means? It means that later then we will have this child going through a lot of mental health issues.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Depression, anxiety, you know, mood disorders, you know.
Let's talk about, I was going to ask about the religious institutions, but I'll save that question for in a few more minutes. But we've talked about the home and the mother. But now, I'm sure the listeners, the parents out there, they are wondering, how can the parents of the teenage mother deal with anger towards the teenager? Herself, the teenage mother, you know, their feelings of being inadequate as a parent. Sometimes the mother of the teenager is blaming themselves, asking if they educated their daughter enough to avoid pregnancy, or they did not educate the daughter. Did they give any sex education? And how does this parent deal with anger towards this new helpless newborn, another mouth to feed in the house, which is already low socioeconomically disadvantaged? How do we start with the mother of the teenage mother?
You correctly put it, Doc. It is not easy for the mother to the teenage mother, right?
I can guess the anger.
The
disappointment.
This comes with a lot of shame.
Yes, shame, shame.
You know, disappointment, like you put it, it comes with a lot of regrets. It comes with a lot of feeling like, what didn't I do? And many mothers, actually, they have asked themselves this question: was I not a parent enough?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that I didn't do?
Yes.
And so many. Mm. So how do we help this part? And then that comes with a lot of hunger. You know, this is a very hungry parent. Especially, I remember the first few months of these girls into pregnancy.
Yes.
Actually, most of them were not living with their parents because they were pushed out of the house.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they were pushed out of the house to go and be with that man who made you pregnant, you know. And that is anger. Exactly. That is anger. So, like I said, a lot of psychoeducation on stress management, on anger management, because it is even in that moment of anger that we've had even some mothers, some parents hurt these teens. They hurt them.
They,
you know,
they hit them.
Exactly.
They insult.
Exactly. In that moment of hunger is where, like we in two cases, when we started in May, in April actually, where two children were forced into procuring an abortion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was hoping that doesn't come up, but it's...
Unfortunately.
It comes in a country where abortion is illegal. So you're pushing your child to go underground and procure an illegal...
Abortion. Yeah.
Not that it's very rare to get a legal abortion in our country. Now you're pushing your child to go...
And
to a quack
and actually the two of them were just taken somewhere, like they were, because these children, what happened is these children, we, like I mentioned to you, we meet every Friday. So this Friday, this girl has a bump. The next Friday, the bump is not there. And I go like, so what happened? What is it? But you know, they took me somewhere and they told me they are washing me. And I don't know. So clearly that was an abortion. An abortion that was procured. So anger management is very important for the parents. Let them redirect, let them love these children. And incidentally, some of these children are very bright. They are very bright academically.
Yes.
So, but you see now the pregnancy has just gone with all that. Yeah. The parents should not be able, should be able to see, separate this child with the pregnancy, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Look at this child, like this is a child, this is my child who just tripped 1 minute and now they are pregnant. Let them love them. Let them protect them. Let them show them love, you know, and create an environment where they don't feel. And that can only be possible if the parents can be able to manage their anger, because anger is a good emotion and it is a very also dangerous emotion. We have had people do very, very terrible things that just when they're in that moment of anger.
And then later regret.
And then later regret. Like I'm sharing, you know, like the first 3 months, many children were not at home in their homes. They had run away because,
yes,
and they would run away and they go live with now other boys out there. You know,
not even the father
no.
Of the baby.
Yeah. So it was a bit really bumpy in the first 3 months.
Yeah.
And the reason was, you know, the parents were very hungry. They were very sad. They were really embarrassed. I didn't want to see them.
Okay.
So the parents should be able to manage their anger. Remember, this is your child, and whether they are pregnant or they are not, doesn't make them evil, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Embrace them and let them go through that pregnancy with, because like the girls we had, they had very, very difficult childhood, because sometimes they would even go without food, because they are being told, go and eat where you
got that pregnant.
Yes.
They have a street term, a big ball. Big ball. Go where you go back to where you found that ball.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh dear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this is a tough question to ask. Religious institutions such as places of worship, they prohibit sex education at schools, in the community. They take a hard stand. Doc, me, I'm drawing from my teenage years. I'm a staunch Catholic. So much fear and guilt was instilled on my peers and myself. I remember so clearly that the religious teacher kept repeating that when you're a young person, gets between 14 and 15 years old, that's when these sexual feelings show up. So these sexual feelings and attractions are evil and they are sinful. The sin is even greater when you act on those sexual feelings. So understanding those sexual feelings was out of the question for me and my peers. Now, a decade later, or even 2 decades later, we haven't resolved the issue. The once confused teenagers, the bride are now a bride and a groom. Now the church changes the tune, or the religious teacher changes the tune. Now you can act on those sexual feelings without a law. And now you're confused and you're feeling guilty. So my question is, these religious institutions have a code of silence, which contribute to this stigma. How can they help the teenage mother psychologically? Because if you're not going to teach sex, you're not going to talk about it, but somehow when that young lady gets married, she's supposed to know everything there is on sexual matters. How do you, now she's got a ball, she's a teenage mother. As a psychologist, 20 years plus, how can these places of worship, the religious institutions, help this teenage mother psychologically?
Thank you so much, Doc. I know a child, along this part, the development, the lifespan of a child or a human being or an adult, really, I know in those years of teenage years, we are either at home in a place of worship or we are in school.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So all these institutions, these are the stakeholders.
Yes, they are the stakeholders.
And everyone has a, every institution has a part to play. So good question. What can our places of worship do to help these children? Number one, let's the you know, the places of worship or the religious institutions, the churches, the mosques, and all these other places where we go, let them be able to stand with these children. Provide, and by when I say provide, even programs to work with them and encourage them, let them have people talking to them from the place of worship environment. These children who go through the pregnancy term, you, without those negative emotions, let them find, it's unfortunate that during the pandemic we have all these places closed, really, but, you know, this is long term, this is even post-COVID. Let's have even the places of worship organized program for these children, where they are talked to, where they are prayed for. You know, just to feel that they belong to the society, because that then minimizes minimizes the emotional turmoil during pregnancy.
Yes.
And like you and me know, Doc, really, the to some extent, the health of the child, the psychological well-being, the mental well-being of the child, and to some extent even physical, the mental health of the mother comes into play. Was this mother stressed up throughout the pregnancy?
Yes.
Lily, that child will have problems. And we have seen even cases of ADHD, some of the mental health challenges later in life.
For our listeners who don't know, ADHD is attention.
Attention deficit disorder.
Attention deficit disorder, yes.
Yeah.
So a pregnant teenager who is stressed can have a child who has got attention deficit disorder. So do your best.
Sure. So you see, when we come through for these children, they tripped and they are supposed to be in school and taking care of themselves and growing themselves. Now they have other babies growing within them. The church should be able, the church, or rather the places of worship, should be able to start with these children. And having even the holiday programs, and one of the churches I know that has done this, not for the teens, the pregnant teens, but generally for the young people, is the Catholic Church that has really tried to, every holiday you find these programs, especially at you know, St. Austin, they have these programs going on where children come and they are taught different, how do I manage stress, how, what is my sexuality, issues of depression, understanding mental health, and stuff like that.
We've all have stories, horrible stories to tell. Let's just say, I don't want to say it, but I've seen pregnant teenagers being sent away from the church, and then 2 years later, that's when they're called back. The child is grown up by 2 years, so it's like, oh, you know, when you needed us, you're not, we are not with you, but now that this phase of your life has passed, you can come back. I'm sorry to say, we really need the church to stand with these young mothers. Let's turn our attention to the schools. You said there's so many stakeholders. Oh God, the teenager mother or the teacher is supposed to fill the gaps in education, including sex. As a community, do you feel as a psychologist we place too much expectation from the school teacher? You know, can the school teacher really help this pregnant mother or the teenage mother? And should they be allowed back in school after giving birth or during pregnancy? You know, this is such a tough question and a tough issue for the different African countries because teenage pregnancy has exploded. What do you do with all these mothers? Let's begin with a teacher. Do we expect too much from her
exactly.
or him?
Yeah, we do. Many times, Doc, I've gotten an opportunity to speak to parents. I actually communicate that I think, you know, parents, and the society expect the teacher to play a role of a parent, a therapist, and the teacher, and that is not possible.
They play a therapist. Mm-hmm. That's so important. Say mm-hmm. that again. A therapist.
A parent, and the teacher,
all three,
and even at some extent, they expect the teacher to be the priest or the qadi or something, you know, like, yeah, you are taught those things in school. So yeah, and anytime I get an opportunity to speak to parents, and I hope our parents will take up this positively.
Yes,
let's lower our expectations. As far as the teacher is concerned, let's just leave the teacher to do the academics, right?
And nothing more.
And let's not expect so much.
Yes.
I know parents are also, I mean, teachers are, most of them are parents.
Yes.
And they will try to what they can,
yes.
really. But you should not expect that this child is having issues, now you take to the teacher. You know, like I've seen many cases that I get at the clinic where children are expelled from school. So you hear from parents here and there that school is the one that spoiled my child. That school is not good enough. That school is not good enough, you see. And you know, that this child, before this child came to school, came from your home, you know.
Yes.
So it is very, very important to separate this. Yes. We should lower our expectations. Let's leave the teacher and support the teacher to cover the syllabus and help these children excel.
So we really should not expect the teacher to be a counselor.
We shouldn't expect the teacher to be the counselor, therapist, or psychologist to these children because already they have too much to do.
Okay.
In our country, there is the system that has come in the ECD.
Yeah.
It is very cumbersome. For the teacher already.
Okay.
There's a lot of involvement. It is hands-on. So let the parents do the parenting and let the teacher do their work. Now, something maybe I would like to mention, Doc, as far as I know, this is some of these issues, we leave them to the policymakers and
stuff
like that. But as stakeholders, because we are the ones, for example, in mental health, we are the ones seeing these children.
Yeah.
We are the ones hearing all these things. So as they come, as they share and all that, you know. So I feel there is a need to incorporate, because you find in school what is emphasized, it is the menstrual period.
The education.
We prepare our children about it. It's about, you know, when you become a teenager, you get pregnant and don't engage in sex and please, you know.
Yes.
So I think that should be really emphasized in the syllabus, in our syllabuses, in those grades where it is age appropriate to be taught. Let children understand this hormone thing. What is this hormone thing about? What are you telling about the hormones rushing around my body, you know. Let the children also be taught. Let them understand what is ovulation, right?
Talk about the biology, reproductive biology.
Exactly.
In a language they can understand.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to them about what to expect, the emotions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The emotions, because clearly there's no 15, 14 year old who go having sex because they want to get a child.
No.
It is just because this child doesn't even understand the body, their bodies. They don't understand the biology. They don't understand. They just hear, don't do this, don't this. But what happens, Doc, me and you, we know, we were teenagers at one point. You want to be with the boys. You want to hang around and you want to play
around.
You want
around. To be cool.
You want to be seen. You want you to want be to sent be... to the shops.
Yeah, you want know. To be the popular one.
You know, you want to. There's a way we feel, you know. And without education, then that made overwhelm me. And, you know, this girl, like I was telling the girls just on Friday, to avoid getting the second baby, just listen to your body. And we are going through ovulation. When we are ovulating us, whether you are 12 or 50, when we are going through ovulation, we become very attractive, Doc, you know. And I was giving them an example of dogs. You know, you see dogs, when the dog is ovulating, you see the other dog is just smelling it. And the smell will just make the male
the
dog.
The pheromones,
just,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. You
the
know?
Hormones, yeah. Yes.
So children should be taught these things.
Okay.
How is my body behaving?
Okay.
Yeah, this is my body. And I was telling them, no, somebody will call you and they are calling you. It is just a casual, we are revising, but your body is all over. And by the time you realize it, you already had sex.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So let's for from the school, like you mentioned, I wonder, maybe hope that could be considered so that it also the topic, this topic can be also be shared with these children with some, you know, some comfort, comfortability. Just be comfortable talking about it.
Okay.
You know.
And so in all these years, you believe that if we give proper education to the young people, they will be able to, we can actually reduce teenage pregnancy, teenage mothers, and actually they will be even be able to handle the whole stress better, you know, the whole stress of teenage motherhood.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sorry, some of these pills, like I get so many girls who are, you know, walking around with some of these brands for, you know, the tablets that you take a few hours so that, you know, you don't get pregnant.
Oh, what are they called? I know that.
I don't want to mention the name, but with your permission, I can mention.
It is... the morning after pill.
Thank you.
I don't know the brand. I know there are many brands out there.
Yes, yes.
But the generic term for them is the morning after.
So we will not have girls, you know, doing all these things because I know my body. I know when I would go visiting because we, I mean, we cannot say that we are going to eradicate, you know, sex. Among the not
young
possible.
Teenagers,
yeah, but we will at least
reduce,
you know, reduce a great deal. So they will be able to understand.
Okay,
they will be able to know. Hey, today I'm not going visiting.
Yeah,
no. That revision, I'm not going to do this revision today with you. When I come to your house visiting, no, we are not watching that movie in the bedroom.
Yeah,
let's just do this thing on the in the sitting room. You know, this kind of thing. You know, so because they know how they are feeling. But what have we done with our education system? We are just telling these kids, when you get to this age, we even buy them pads before they even get there, you know, and even from home. I think also the term sex education really has been misunderstood.
Okay.
Yeah, if you tell a child, a grade six child, today we are having sex education.
They start giggling, laughing.
Giggling because, you're teaching me how to do it. So the curiosity sets in. So let's teach these children the biology. Let's teach them, you know, the psychology. Let's teach them, you know, let them understand. You know, it's not just about sex. It's just about managing my body, you know. Before the thing happens, before the act, so much happens, Dr. Lee.
So I wish you had come to my school some 30 years ago, or was it 40 years ago? Because in my high school, sex education was shown to us just as we were leaving the secondary school. Mm-hmm. A video was put about the biology, and that was left. And we had more questions than we had answers. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're going mm-hmm. to university, you're going to enter a very difficult phase of your growth, or our growth.
Mm.
Wow, we can talk about school, but now I really, really want to get to the teenage mother herself.
Mm.
We've been talking about teenage pregnancy, teenage mothers, but now let's put our shoes. Let's walk into this. What do they say? Walk into their shoes, or get into the shoes of a teenage mother.
Getting into those shoes.
So once a teenager, she finds herself pregnant, and she has a baby. She's got so many questions. Is my life over? After I have given birth to this infant, can I go back to school? Is my education over? How do I survive and feed this new baby? Where do I go? What do I do with my life? I mean, the list is endless. They even ask, how come others had sex and didn't get pregnant? How come I did? How do I fend for the teenage, for the baby?
Mm.
And the teenage father is gone. He's no longer in the picture anyway.
Mm.
Like those group that we talked, they said none of their fathers are in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, all 20 of them.
Mm.
Mm. So now let's begin with a question now. How do we help this teenage mother with feelings of guilt and shame? She's here. She's had a baby, and now she's helpless. She's dependent on her parents.
Mm.
How do we help her deal with feelings of guilt and shame?
Mm.
Or how can they even stop feeling that they are a burden?
Yeah, so thank you, Doc. Yeah? Mm. You know, clearly, as you are, you know, as you're talking, I was just, you know, trying to look into those girls, because for us, you've interacted with these girls,
yes.
Doc, and
yes.
you've seen them, and not something that we are reading on paper.
Yeah.
These are children who are at a point where they feel worthless. They are self-esteem is below the socks.
Mm.
Their hope is, it's like their life has come to the end.
Yes.
Many times I ask them, and I think this will be the same for every teenage mom out there.
Mm.
You know, that what is your greatest, like I ask them this question, what is your greatest fear? What is your worry? And they always say, my future. My future. So what can we do? How can we help these children? And this, I expect this to happen even from the home front, where these children are living.
Mm.
Let's give these children hope. They need psychosocial support.
You have to really explain that to me now. What do you mean, or to the listeners, what psychosocial support is?
Yeah, yeah. Psychosocial support is basically just helping these girls to manage what is happening in their life at that particular time. What is at hand? This is a child who is in school, who is supposed to be actually a normal child playing with other children out there, but not their mothers. You know, it is too much. You know, so it is just helping them to, because so much emotions come, negative emotions come with pregnancy, you know.
Mm.
So psychosocial is just helping them to manage that situation at that particular time, you know, psychologically.
So let's whether help it's them. Food, give them food,
mm-hmm.
give them clothing,
mm-hmm.
You said take care of their needs. Mm-hmm. I'm talking of their physical needs.
Yeah.
And then show them that this is not the end.
Yeah.
This too shall pass.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And also
it is not your end.
Exactly. It's not the end. It could be a beginning.
It could be a beginning.
You know, I was telling these girls the other day, you know, you could be carrying a president of this
of the
country.
Nation. Yes.
2050. You
yes.
know, this child, you know, this child would might even, you know, bring blessings into your life, you know.
Yes.
So just helping them, rationalizing their, you know, helping them process their pain, you know, and managing stress. It is very stressful being a teen and you have a child to manage. Where this child knows, I am in form two, I'm out of school. This child is already dealing with it so much externally. So by offering psychosocial support, you'll be able to help them now manage even their thoughts cognitively. What am I thinking? Am I thinking that my life is over? Am I thinking that this child has just brought a stop into my life? So just helping them see that there is life, you know, and helping them to refocus. Let's not focus on the baby. Yes, let's just parent this baby. Let's just provide to them as young mothers, but there is school too. There is school that I need to go to. So they need the children need a lot of support. And remember, these are children who even their brain is not well developed. They're just 12, 13, 14. And they can't make decisions for themselves. So as a society, we need to help these children to clearly make them understand that the baby does not make you, you know, stop going to school. And like the other day I was telling them, you know, even as you sit down at home, there's no school now, you're just at home. Don't just make sure you are watchful on who you spend time with. If you start spending time at home with older women who are just there, you know, they don't have a life there, you know, you be like them. Remember, you are still a child, even if you have this baby, you know. So these children, they need support. And it is everyone's responsibility to start with these children so that we can minimize stigma and also to make sure that their mental health, you know, they are okay. You know, they can make decisions. They can play like the other kids, you know.
Would you recommend that they go and back to the peers? If it's a girl of 14 or a girl of 18, would you recommend they go and re-interact with their peers?
Oh, yes.
So do not separate from their peers.
No. Uh-huh. Yeah. Remember, this child is still this child is still developing. They are still growing.
Yes.
And this child comes actually at a point where they are trying to find their identity.
Yes.
So helping them and even push them to even interact with their peers, it will help them to develop normally.
Than
now being on this side where now they think, you know, I'm a mother, my life is
over. No,
they are still children.
Yes.
You know. And I recommend, really, I applaud parents who have taken these children, like they are supporting them, and most of the children have been able to go back to school and they are taking care of the babies.
Okay.
Yeah, those parents, I really applaud them.
So as a parent of a teenage mother, be a parent to the teenage mother and the baby.
Exactly.
And let the mother continue growing as a teenager, developing her mind as a teenager and into adulthood.
Yeah.
So that she can see that, okay, the pregnancy was a brief interruption.
Mm-hmm.
Not a permanent
interruption. Exactly.
Wow. Mm. So I know this is Africa, and we're trying to, the pandemic has put a curfew on us, so we've got to finish so we can run home. But where can a teenage mother get psychological help or a family?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say I am in an informal settlement. I am having all these problems because of my pregnancy. Where can I get psychological help if I can't get it from my parents or the father of the baby? Where can I run to?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I ask that because not every person can come to a psychologist like you.
Exactly.
You're expensive. And there are not many people like you, Doc. So
yeah.
I'm talking for the low-resourced environment, the informal sector, the poor family, or even for the upper middle class. Everything is not so rosy behind those nice manicured gardens. Where can a pregnant teenager go?
Okay. At 12, Doc, at 14 and 15, this child may not even know where to go, where to seek help.
She's too confused.
She's already too confused. Thank you. She's already too overwhelmed. But I would like to call to make a call to the professionals out there, to the institutions that offer therapy. And you know, if each one of us did something small, each one of us is contributing in a small way. I think we can be able to help quite a bit, because the small area, Doc, where you visited the girls, it's a very small area. But you can imagine if somebody else was offering the same in the other neighborhood and another neighborhood.
Yes.
Because in this part of the world, we don't have structures where we have organizations that are non-profit making, and they are, you know, offering, say, for example, therapy or any medical care to less fortunate. So I will leave it really to the professionals. Let us come out and do something where we are in a small way. Because an hour of explaining or talking to these girls how to manage stress, and you're talking to 20 girls, oh my, that really helps a lot. So just looking out for professionals. I know some places of worship, you find they have a counseling department. You know, even schools, you find most of the schools now in our country especially, they have the counseling department, where like schools have a school psychologist. And I hope that really, like, for example, our government is able to, you know, emphasize on that and put more weight into it, so that we can be able to work with these children.
Would you tell them to go to the nearest dispensary, nearest health care institution to look for help or get a direction from there?
I think that would be very helpful for Doc, because especially the government run institutions, because you find in every sub-county you find there's a government facility. Even at the one level, you find that there's a government facility,
a government clinic of some kind.
Where they would offer these services. So they would work there and they can be able to be helped.
I'd like to say thank you to our guest, Dr. Josephine Kinya, and she has been very, very good, actually very generous with
thank
her
you.
Time. So thank you, Doc, for agreeing to talk
You're
with
welcome.
Me. This is a topic that will continue to haunt us as a continent. Unfortunately, we do not foresee it going away, but at least you've given us some insights. Thank you, listeners, for listening to us, and I hope that with a few tips that Dr. Josephine has given you, you'll be able to help the teen mother psychologically. Doctor, would you like to share your phone number? I know this is going to an international audience, but if you want to share your phone number internationally, you can. People can contact you.
Okay. Thank you, Doc. And I appreciate it. It was my pleasure sharing this with you. I love doing this, right?
I can see.
I hope the little that we've shared has been able to help one listener or two out there. And teenage mother, please reach out. And I'll give my contact. 7 7 2 8 2 4 8 7 8 6.
Okay.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you so much.
Okay, listeners, until next time, remember to eat healthy so you can live healthy. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.